Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, you health renaissance people. Yes, this is Dr. John Bergman talking to you from 2017, the Dark Ages. Yes, this is the time when the doctor is much smarter than your physiology. It is true that doctors learn that the body is self-healing and self-regulating in school, and then that knowledge is stripped from them. And I think there's an operation to eliminate common sense. We're going to talk about blood pressure. Why is this important? Well, for one, your body is self-healing and self-regulating. This everybody knows. But what's the deal with blood pressure? Why is our species so messed up that we need someone to check it? And if it's high, then we need a chemical to lower it. Is it truly the silent killer? Is the doctor actually right in this? Are consistent levels of high blood pressure a good indicating of damage? And if you take a chemical to lower it? I mean, is all of this stuff true? If this is true, why are we not checking blood pressure of the dog or the cat or the fish that you have at home? So let's talk about normal. Well, for one, heart disease is a problem. You're talking cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in our animal species. Now, you understand, I'm not talking about water buffalo. I'm not talking about caribou. I'm not talking about the other mammals on the planet. It turns out just our species. Now, this is a new phenomenon. Cardiovascular disease was not a leading cause of death 100 years ago. So, how is high blood pressure diagnosed? Okay, because this starts you on that cascade. Well, in our talk on what blood pressure is, what the normal number is, we go through and detail out what a sphygmomanometer is. We go detail out everything. But if you ask the average person what blood pressure should be, they will spout off like good little programmed humans. Yes, it's 120 over 80. Really? Okay. So that's everybody in every state, every age, every body type, every size. They're all supposed to have 120 over 80. Is that true? Well, the average person will say, no, it's not. And the average doctor will say, yes, they will. So where did this 120 over 80 come up with? Well, I'll tell you right now, there's a committee that meets, and it's called the Joint National Committee, and there's a group of medical professionals, people that own hospitals and drug reps, and they get together about every 10 years or so, and they decide on what your physiology should be. Yeah, that's right. They're not deciding on your fish's physiology or your cat's physiology, just your physiology. So in 1997, they came up with 120 over 80. Then and that worked really well. And they had prehypertension, and hypertension was 140 over 90. So, you know, I mean, they're looking at this should be the norm for everyone. Now, if you're not in this norm or this category, then they give you a medication to lower your blood pressure. Now, that worked well until 2004. Then the Joint National Committee 7 met, and they had new guidelines. They said, no, 120 over 80 wasn't right. It needs to be 115 over 75. And what used to be normal was now considered pre-hypertension. Again, not based in science. This is just a group of guys getting together saying, hey, this should be normal. Then that worked until 2014, but you got to figure, if you're lowering blood pressure, you're actually lowering oxygen down to the tissue, and that can have a negative effect on health. So they decided, the Joint National Committee 8 met, and they have new evidence-based guidelines. And that was the interesting part, because the new evidence-based guidelines said that normal was now 140 over 90, which used to be hypertension back in 1997, if you're less than 60 years old. However, normal, if you're over 60 years old, was now 150 over 90. And it's amazing to think that these are old evidence-based guidelines and new evidence-based guidelines. So, how should blood pressure be taken? See, I'm just giving you the facts and the data so that you can go up to your doctor and say, hey, look, doc, how should this be taken? What number should it be? Well, first, how should blood pressure be taken? Now, it should be taken with the arm supported level with the heart, patient sitting for at least 5 minutes. And if an elevation is found with the blood pressure taken after 5 minutes, they should be laying down and then check it on standing up. So this is, they're ruling out postural effects because when you lay down, the blood pressure typically is going to go lower. When you stand up, there's going to be a slight rise in it. Well, here's some of the challenges with taking the correct blood pressure. Two-thirds of Americans are overweight. So if somebody uses a normal cuff size on a larger arm, it's going to lead to a false elevation. Also, if patients talk during blood pressure taken, and that occurs in a lot of different offices, talking during blood pressure being taken can increase blood pressure at least 50% in some. And so that's mind-boggling. There's also pseudohypertension, okay, when the same cuff size is used for everyone, because you'll see not just obese people, but people with large arms or small arms. Also, what other kind of things can affect blood pressure? The time of the day, room temperature, full bladder, eating, drinking, smoking within the past hour, even, all of these things can affect blood pressure readings. So let's go back to like what every doctor should know. Let's look at Harrison's medical textbook. And when they talk about hypertension or high blood pressure, they quote, "The first principle of therapy of hypertension is the knowledge of when to treat and when not to treat." And so let's say that you're in this day and age and you're diagnosed with high blood pressure. Make sure they're using the right committee, because if it's Joint National Committee 6 and they say 120 over 80, we now know that it's not 120 over 80, okay? That, we're now in Joint National Committee 8, so if you're over 60, it should be 150 over 90. So make sure they're using the right gauge. But what are they going to give you? Well, they're going to give you a calcium channel blocker, a beta blocker, an ACE inhibitor, a diuretic, and possibly some cholesterol drugs. So let's look at that. Let's look at the American Journal of Cardiology, what they say about this. Calcium channel blockers are widely used to control hypertension. It turns out that this could increase heart failure. Isn't that interesting? So the blood pressure, the silent killer, that if they lower the blood pressure with a calcium channel blocker, it can increase heart failure. Let's look at beta blockers. It turns out that forcing, in these beta blockers and ACE inhibitors, if you slow the heart down, you're literally decreasing blood supply to tissues and organ systems. And this means that the body is now forced to go through life with less oxygen than it needs. And this can lead to early death from heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. Let's look at the studies on diuretics. Okay, the Mr. Fit trial. Now, this was a huge trial, and they found out that the subset of hypertensives, the people with high blood pressure that were treated with diuretics, had the highest mortality rate. They were speculating possibly from ventricular fibrillation due to potassium depletion. Now, the Mr. Fit objective was to get the blood pressure below 140 over 90, and they achieved their goal. What if their goal was 120 over 80 or 115 over 75? Would death rates have increased? More than likely. Let's look at the blood pressure. And this was a brilliant article out of the University of Alabama, published in Science Daily, May 2015. Title of the article, "Blood Pressure Medications Can Lead to an Increased Risk of Stroke." That's right. It turns out that for every one blood pressure drug you're taking, and this could be ACE inhibitor, diuretic, beta blocker, every one blood pressure increased or drug that you're taking to decrease your blood pressure, your risk of stroke increases a third. and people who needed three or more medications were at a 240% higher risk than those at normal systolic pressure than those not taking the medications. And here's a quote from the researcher. You're in as much trouble by the time you're on three medications that achieve excellent control as when you have hypertension that is untreated, which is amazing. End of quote. Now, one of the researchers also said, we want to raise the issue that despite great advances in pharmaceutical approach, relying solely on this approach is going to come at a dear price of people's lives. So, obviously, if somebody is experiencing high blood pressure, okay, and you're giving a medication to lower the blood pressure without looking at why or how it's measured or what the cause is, it's not going to be a good outcome. Let's look at cholesterol drugs because this is commonly prescribed. And now this was published in the Archives of Internal Medicine, a review of 11 randomized controlled trials, 65,000 participants, and the conclusion, they did not find evidence for the benefit of statin therapy on all-cause mortality. It's interesting that in the Expert Review of Clinical Pharmacology 2015, they found out that statins, the drugs used to control cholesterol, actually increase hardening the arteries or atherosclerosis and increase heart failure. That's really bad. And in that article, they go on, thus, the epidemic of heart failure and atherosclerosis that plagues the modern world may be paradoxically be aggravated by the pervasive use of statin drugs. We propose that current statin treatment guidelines be critically reevaluated. That would make sense. And, you know, it also can negatively affect epigenetics. When we talk about the Journal of Clinical Metabolism, Clinical Experimental Journal, 2008, they talk about cholesterol-lowering drugs, beta blockers, diuretics, can actually alter genetic expression, leading to heart disease, cancer, nerve and mental disorders, I mean, a number of different problems. And the toughest thing, if you could ask, have you ever heard of a doctor taking somebody off of heart medications because the drugs actually fix the problem? No. So why is drugging the heart a bad idea? Let's look at this. We're discounting that the body is presenting with a normal physiologic response based on the stress load. That means that the body is going to respond correctly given its environment. Obviously, the data doesn't support giving a chemical decrease in the body's physiologic response to it or the stressors, the stress response to the environment without addressing the stressors. So you're decreasing that. What happens if you're giving a drug to slow the body's function down, to slow the heart down? You're decreased circulation, you're creating an oxygen deficit, you're creating more fatigue. Long-term effect of lowering oxygen out of tissue, heart muscle degeneration, heart enlargement, degeneration of any organ or tissue, not getting the blood, lung congestion, premature aging. Heck, even Dr. Lucian Leap, and this was published way back in 1999, said that the medical field is the third leading cause of death after heart disease and cancer. And I got to tell you, from the data that we just uncovered today or revealed today, since blood pressure drugs are causing heart failure and heart disease, perhaps it's probably the first leading cause of death. But he's saying, look, man, this is 180,000 doctor-caused injuries per year. There's three jumbo jet crashes. It's like three jumbo jets crashing every 2 days. That's insane. We need to rethink this. And the Journal of the American Medical Association, 2015, quote, many current practices that seem logical but are without evidence may be reconsidered and incorporated into a less dogmatic approach and more patient-centered approach to care. I'm in total agreement. So just making sure that everybody's blood pressure is the same it doesn't make sense. It doesn't talk about pulse pressure. It doesn't talk about what that person is experiencing. Dr. Paul Roche, medical doctor, president of the American Institute of Stress, clinical professor of medicine and psychiatry, quote, when he's talking about blood pressure, it is simply an elevated blood pressure reading on some measuring device that can have many different causes. I'm in total agreement. Let's look at the Journal of the American Medical Association. Heart failure patients with high systolic blood pressure had lower death rates. Now, these are patients who had damage to the heart, and turns out if they had systolic blood pressure higher than 161, okay, they had less death rates. And in fact, mortality death rates were more than four times higher for those with systolic pressures of less than 120. And this was 48,000 heart patients. Is high blood pressure the only risk factor for heart problems? When you look at this, we're talking there's over 300 risk factors for heart attacks. And this could be such as premature baldness, high selenium in toenails, pot belly. I mean, there's so many different markers that can look at it. But also, the same can be true for lowering an elevated systolic or diastolic pressure unless treatment is directed at what's the cause of the problem. So what about looking at the cause? So here's the new health paradigm. This is what we got to change. Health is the natural state of the body, and the power that made the body heals the body. That would be amazing. So does that mean we respect it? So let's look at blood pressure. Blood pressure actually changes depending on your need. And this is what I'll tell patients. I said, okay, do you want to check blood pressure when you're bike riding or when you're carrying packages or when you're, and they'll look at me and they'll say, no, doc, you know, we want to check it when we're resting. And the reason is we've got to walk these people through to have them understand that the blood pressure will go up and down depending on the need. And to just take it, it's just a snapshot in time. So let's look at the autonomic nervous system. This is how your body responds to the environment. Now, when you're looking at the body's response to the environment, you view the environment through your automatic nervous system or autonomic nervous system. We've got two aspects of this. One, sympathetic. That's the fight or flight that keeps you alive under stress. So when the sympathetic is activated, blood pressure actually elevates. Heart rate elevates. Blood supply to the gut shuts down. Immune system is going to be temporarily decreased. Blood's going to thicken because your body's preparing for battle. LDL cholesterol increases. Blood sugar increases. Stress hormones increase. Now, what's the other half of this? The parasympathetic nervous system. Parasympathetic nervous system literally is called the rest, digest, and repair method. So that rest, digest, and repair method is vital, but it's mainly activated at night. What truly we need is we need both of these systems in balance, because with one's high, the other's low. So is it true that in order for someone to have higher blood pressure, they have to be in a stressed state? Yeah, could be. So there's physical, chemical, or emotional stressors. This is what we have to look at. Now, when we look at the body's normal, intelligent response to stress, remember, it's not an unintelligent. This is the body is always responding intelligently. Under stress, the adrenal glands increase heart rate, increase blood flow to the muscles, increase pulse rate, blood pressure, increases breathing, bronchodilation. This is vital. Cortisol is the number one stress hormone that's secreted in if there's inflammation or if there's stress. Why? Because it mobilizes and increases amino acids. It stimulates the liver to convert amino acids to glucose. It stimulates increased glycogen in the liver. It maintains resistance to stress. The functions of cortisol are phenomenal. So are we under chronic stress? Absolutely. You're talking Americans By the American Psychological Survey, 25%, that's one in four Americans, have high levels of stress. 50% of Americans experience moderate levels of stress. So if they're under stress, what happens? Is their body going to be responding to the stressful environment with an elevation of blood pressure? Absolutely. What happens if there's chronic elevated levels of cortisol? You're talking increased blood sugar, or decrease in post-protein synthesis, osteoporosis, lymphatic tissue shrinkage. What type of things? Because when we're looking at physical, chemical, and emotional stress, the body responds the same to all three. What type of chemical stressors are causing the body to adapt to this stressful environment? Well, let's look at the most common chemical stressors. Vaccinations, medications, environmental toxins, non-organic or GMO foods, nutritional deficiencies, and literally the chronic stress perception. What's the most chemical stressor that we have exposing our children to? Well, how about 69 doses of 16 different vaccines by the time they're 18? Yeah, that's unusual. We know that the efficacy and science has not been studied in this, and we're seeing that 100% of the kids have some type of reaction to this, a negative reaction. We know that statistically, one in two have a chronic illness or disease. We know, it depends on if you look at the CDC or other sites, we're talking between 1 in 28 and a 1 in 68 chance of autism. But 100% of the kids that are through this vaccination protocol are going to have one of four problems, either breathing, bowel, behavior, or skin. Nobody makes it out of this. Let's look at the Journal of Apoptosis. We're just going to look at hepatitis B vaccine. It turns out, we conclude that exposure to a low-dose adjuvanted hepatitis B vaccine leads to loss of mitochondrial integrity, apoptosis induction, and cell death. Now, mitochondrial integrity, when we're talking about cardiovascular or heart function, there's a tremendous amount of mitochondria in the heart muscle. It's dangerous. And almost all vaccines contain aluminum, and we know that can coagulate proteins. It can increase vascular endothelial adhesiveness, resulting in increased cardiovascular disease. Let's look at glyphosates. Now, there's another chemical stressor that you're exposed to, and it's actually linked to cardiovascular disease, depression, autism, multiple sclerosis. Why? Because it's a mineral chelator and a natural antibiotic. Let's look at toxic sweeteners. Let's look at high fructose corn syrup. According to the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, consumption of high fructose sweetened beverages, okay, increase risk factors for cardiovascular disease by up to 25%. That's crazy. What about medications? And I'm talking just like the standard medications. We already went through beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, diuretics. I mean the standard ones, like how about aspirin and nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories? We're talking 70 million prescriptions for nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories are written each year. 30 billion doses of nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories are consumed annually. What happens to these drugs? And this is, we're talking Advil, Motrin, Aleve. 60% increased risk of cardiovascular problems. 60% increase of congenital heart failure. 76% increased risk of atrial fibrillation. It's mind-boggling. What about physical stressors? We're going to run through a number of cases on physical stress, but what about sedentary lifestyle? Is a sedentary lifestyle a physical stressor? Absolutely it is. We're talking, and this was published in the European PubMed version, sedentariness is associated with several cardiovascular risk factors and may be responsible for the increasing prevalence of obesity and diabetes. Okay, in 2016, another journal article, Low-grade chronic inflammation and cardiovascular risk are associated with a sedentary lifestyle. What about TV watching and the Journal of Circulation? Television viewing was associated with an increased risk of all-cause cardiovascular disease mortality. What about emotional stress? Talking physical, chemical, and emotional. And this could be mental abuse, sexual abuse, childbirth, financial problems, job problems, bullying, social isolation, all of these. When we look at the Medical Hypothesis Journal, a variety of adverse cardiovascular effects range from sudden cardiac death triggered by natural disasters, earthquakes, to transient myocardial, stunning, result from heightened sympathetic overload. Turns out that if you have that sympathetic response where you're under stress, your body can have a negative response to the heart. The number one thing I want you to own, and this is super, super important, you've got to look at the nervous system as the real key. When you're looking at blood and blood pressure, blood has a function. And if you just look at the high blood pressure number and you're not looking at the function of the blood, then you're not looking at the real cause. And then I want you to look at the pulse pressure, the difference between the high number and the low number. The high number is called systolic. The low number is called diastolic. The difference between those should be around 40 millimeters of mercury. So if you have 140 over 100, that's difference is 40, and that's appropriate. If you have a larger pulse pressure, and I'm talking like 140 over 70, which is a difference of 70, it means the blood's not efficient at doing its job. So the only way that blood pressure should be utilized is to look at the pulse pressure, and if you have a higher blood pressure or pulse pressure, that it's greater than 40, it means that your blood is not efficient. So juicing, blending, appropriate nutrition, sleep patterns, look at the stressors, the physical, chemical, and emotional stress. That's brilliant. And then the pulse pressure will get more in the normal range. If you have less than 40, where you have 120 over 100, okay, that's a pulse pressure of only 20. That means that the heart is working ridiculously hard. So you're under extreme stressors. So obviously, when you're looking at the physical, chemical, and emotional stressors that your body is exposed to, your body's going to respond correctly. There's nothing broken in your body if you're prescribed medications to lower blood pressure. It's not kidney damage. I've had patients with one kidney. They can work just fine. I've had patients with old bullet wounds in both kidneys, and they could still regulate their blood pressure. So there's nothing broken in your body that causes it to not regulate its blood pressure effectively, unless it's a toxic, deficient lifestyle. That's why we tell you to get your blood pressure healthy. Realize that it's a snapshot in time and not that good of a gauge of health. Pulse pressure is the best gauge that you can have based on blood pressure, but even that's not accurate. Look at the physical, chemical, and emotional stressors. Get your nervous system checked to make sure that your body is in a healthy balance. If you're in a sympathetic dominant state or parasympathetic dominant or low functioning parasympathetic or low functioning sympathetic, that autonomic nervous system check is vital. And then look at the physical, chemical, and emotional stress load you may be under. And so what do you do to get that corrected? Exercising, moving your body, you're programmed to move. And in fact, when we look at the Journal of Sports Medicine, just regular physical exercise increases angiogenesis, which is formation of blood vessels, neurogenesis, nervous system. I mean, just movement is so vital. And then putting nutrients in your system is vital. Deep sleep is vital. Prayer and meditation is vital. You do all of those aspects, your stress levels will be down, and your blood pressure will follow accordingly. If you don't deal with the stress levels effectively and you drug the symptom, the outcome is not good. Your body is self-healing, self-regulating. Look in the mirror and smile, because you are built by God. This is Dr. John Bergman. God bless you, and I love you. I am your health advocate.